it's kind of nice because the mistakes I make with the kids, I get a chance to fix.
All right, being 7 o'clock p.m. on this, the 19th of April, 2016, I will call the Springfield Planning Commission to order. We will begin tonight by, if you'll join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. All rise. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right. Do we have any adjustments to the agenda tonight? Hearing none, we'll move forward. We have time at the beginning of the meeting for public testimony or input. This would not apply to the public hearing that we're having. I have no request for public input, so I'm going to go ahead and move forward. Tonight, we will be conducting a quasi-judicial public hearing related to a discretionary use permit for the Springfield Utility Board, applicant number TYP 316-00001. And at this time, I will turn it over to our legal counsel to discuss holding a quasi-judicial session.
Okay. I didn't turn this on.
It's on.
Okay, sorry. This hearing tonight is characterized as a quasi-judicial hearing. Quasi-judicial means that certain due process procedural rights are associated with these decision-making processes. These rights include the right to notice, the right to present evidence, to have a written decision based upon standards, and to an impartial decision maker. The primary purpose of the hearing is to establish a record upon which a decision can be made. Evidence. The evidentiary rules associated with these hearings are less restrictive than used in circuit courts, and all relevant testimony, including hearsay testimony, may be considered. It is important to note that you may raise procedural and substantive issues at this hearing, that you must raise procedural and substantive issues at this hearing, or you will be prohibited from raising those issues subsequently on appeal before the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals. A person raising the issue must support raising the issue with statements or evidence sufficiently specific so that the Planning Commission has an opportunity to respond to the concerns or the issue. If you are the applicant, you must raise concerns regarding any proposed conditions of approval to preserve your right to appeal and or to seek damages in circuit court. Failure to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the Planning Commission to respond to the issues precludes an action for damages in the circuit court. Burden of proof. In a quasi-judicial decision-making process, the burden is on the applicant to show by a preponderance of the evidence that all of the applicable approval criteria have been met. Those criteria are posted on the wall. Springfield Development Code 5.9.120 are the criteria for discretionary uses, and 517-125 are the criteria for site plan review. Those criteria will be outlined in the staff report and will also be summarized by staff in their presentation. The record in this matter consists of the application and any supporting information, and any staff report and supporting documents, and any testimony and documentary evidence admitted during this hearing. If you want an item entered into the record, present that item to the planning secretary, orally or in writing. If there is any question in your mind whether material is in the record, make a point of asking that it be accepted into the record. By statute, you have the right to request that the record be held open for 7 days. You do not have to give a reason for the request, but you must make the request before the hearing is closed. If new evidence is introduced during that time, the record may be held open for an additional period of time to allow other parties an opportunity to respond to new evidence. In a de novo hearing, the applicant always gets the last word. You also have the right to request a continuance of the hearing. A continuance is discretionary with the Planning Commission. The party requesting it must show that prejudice to his or her rights will not be cured by merely holding the record open. Testimony. This hearing is recorded on tape, so I ask that those who wish to testify follow a few procedures. First, please testify from the podium to my left, not from the citizen seats. Second, begin your testimony by stating your name and address for the record. This will enable the Planning Secretary and the Planning Commission to identify the testimony offered by each speaker and will assist in creating a transcript of the hearing if that is necessary. Finally, if you want a copy of the written decision, please provide your name and address to the Planning Secretary. Decision. The Planning Commission will issue a written decision after the record is closed. Appeal. For a Type 3 decision by the Planning Commission, any person participating in the hearing may appeal the Planning Commission's decision to the City Council. Please consult an attorney regarding the deadline for the appeal and the form of appeal. For a Type 2 decision, the Planning Commission's decision is final. Any person who participated in the hearing may appeal the Planning Commission's decision to the Land Use Board of Appeals. Please consult an attorney regarding the deadline for the appeal and the form of appeal. Impartiality. The Oregon Land Use Law requires that the Planning Commission disclose any ex parte contacts or conflicts of interest related to this matter and allow any person to challenge the Planning Commission for bias. Generally, a conflict of interest involves a situation where the decision maker, his or her family, or business would benefit or suffer by his or her decision. An ex parte contact is a communication to the decision maker that includes substantive issues regarding the application and occurs outside the public venue. Commissioner, at this time, it is appropriate to open the hearing.
Okay. The hearing is now open. Commissioners, this is your opportunity to declare any potential conflicts of interest or ex parte contact.
I'd say it's just an ex parte. I run past the area in question daily, so I'm familiarity with it mentally.
Okay. I have none.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, and I have none. At this time, we'll ask Andy to come up and give us a staff report.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. I'll just go through the site context. I've got a PowerPoint presentation I'll administer myself here. The site is on the west edge of the Mountain Gate neighborhood on a wooded west-facing hillside. There's two existing water reservoir tanks on the site. They've been there for more than 50 years. Currently, there's a dirt access driveway that runs from Mountain Gate Drive up to the site through the trees, and there is the fenced compound around the tank itself. The request by Springfield Utility Board is for installation of a pump station, about 800 square foot cinder block building that would allow for water to be pumped down the hill and join the existing water main in Mountain Gate Drive. Currently, there is a water line that runs directly down the hill and between two condominium buildings, and it's not a desirable situation to have a water line running through private property. The building proximity is such that water line replacement would be very difficult, as I understand it, and therefore Springfield Utility Board is looking at an alternate routing, which would be to the southwest out to Mountain Gate Drive. Little history about the site. The area that's surrounded by the white dotted line, excluding the parcels that contain the tanks, is a former subdivision phase of the Mountain Gate West development area. There were 10 residential lots that were purchased by sub. They were consolidated into a single parcel from 10 individual lots. They also vacated a segment of South 59th Street that ran more or less along the alignment of the existing driveway, and consolidated everything into one parcel on which they proposed to place this pump station. So I guess this is proposed as an alternative to what could have been a residential development. The lots were live, so to speak, for about 8 years. until they were sold to Sub and consolidated. So it is zoned low-density residential, and because this particular site is not designated in the adopted public facilities and services plan, discretionary use proceedings are required in order to establish the pump station on this site. Staff has outlined the criteria for discretionary use approval and is recommending approval of this discretionary use permit subject to conditions as outlined in the staff report. One of the conditions that I wanted to make note of is that the applicant would need to retroactively make an amendment to the public facilities and services plan to show this facility as a built facility or an approved facility, so that the plan, it would be consistent with the plan moving forward. So that is a fairly significant step. However, there are other Springfield Utility Board projects, both in water and electric, and this could be bundled with other projects that are upcoming down the road, such that it doesn't represent an onerous requirement on the part of the developer or Sub as the developer. There are other projects that will need to be adopted into the public facilities and services plan as Springfield continues to grow and more facilities and utility installations are required. The site plan approval, or recommended conditions of approval that is also bundled with this, indicates that there will be impacts to the hillside. The developer is proposing to widen and realign the existing dirt driveway up to the site to allow for maintenance vehicles and fire trucks should the need arise. They're also looking to create a hammerhead turnaround for emergency vehicles in the event that response is required. This will require some recontouring of the hillside immediately, particularly uphill from the existing driveway. And the dashed area with the contour lines shows how the slope is going to be recontoured. As a result of that, there will be removal of trees along that linear corridor. Staff notes that there will be trees remaining on the periphery of the site and also in the Willamette Lane owned property that's uphill of this site between the Sub installation and lots that back onto this wooded area from Greystone Loop and Mountain Gate neighborhood. There is a hillside development overlay and tree felling permit that the applicant has submitted concurrently. Approval of these would be predicated on the discretionary use, followed by a site plan review approval. Should those be granted this evening or soon, those would be issued by staff. I do note that there are parties of record on the tree felling permit, which is an appealable decision. Public testimony has been provided in response to the tree felling notification. There wasn't anything specifically directed to the discretionary use, so there's nothing that's been included in the packet. Regarding the site plan review, staff again recommends approval subject to conditions. Many of the conditions are standard regarding stormwater management, requirement to vegetate stormwater facilities. In this case, there is a roadside ditch on the downhill, or I guess southwest side of the driveway, that would run into a grassy swale, which would discharge down towards the driveway exit out onto Mountain Gate Drive. Staff has included conditions for maintenance of this stormwater facility, erosion sediment control, establishment of the vegetation. Staff has also linked the other concurrently submitted applications, the tree felling and the hillside development, to this decision as well. There are also a couple of detail issues. Staff had advised that light fixture placement would need to meet the residential standards of 12 feet high. And also, there would need to be a design for the retaining wall that's proposed uphill of the tanks themselves. The other conditions are outlined on the decision here if you have any questions about it. The applicant has been provided copies of the staff report. We did clarify with their project engineer that the vegetation would need to be established over a period of time, not immediately, and that typically there may be interim measures, fabric, other types of sediment control measures, typical of construction, that can be used until the vegetation becomes established. So they're satisfied with that inquiry of staff. Do note that the applicants here this evening are their representative, and they're no doubt be making the presentation. But I'm happy to answer any questions you might have of these applications.
Yes. Commissioner Bose.
Why is the existing facility not currently included in the public facilities and service plan?
I believe that the tanks are, but not the pump station itself. And there's two different types of facilities determined with a pump station versus a reservoir tank.
Is that correct, Bart? Do you know that?
We have a sub-representative in the audience too, and they're confirming that. So it's, you know, it's another type of facility which doesn't necessarily have to co-locate at the reservoir tank, but in this case, it needs to be added and depicted on the plans as part of the overall water infrastructure for Springfield and the metro area, I guess, in Springfield.
Thank you. Questions?
I have some specific questions regarding the engineering on the plans. Would that be better to address to Rick?
Potentially. I'm kind of a plan engineer, not an engineer. You might want to direct them to the applicant. They may or may not be able to respond specifically. They might want to follow up with their project engineer, or Bart would be able to comment expertly on the engineering of the site as well.
Great. Questions?
I do note that I think you said this fairly clearly, but I just wanted to repeat so I'm sure that I understand. There is vegetation, there are trees on the downhill slope as well as the uphill slope of this. And the trees, there will be some trees replaced as well.
Correct.
As part of this project. And I noted that your one of the things that staff are asking for are fairly good sized trees, 4 to 6 foot trees, rather than
whips or
exactly.
Correct.
And the thinking is there they will establish more quickly and give some screening as well. Is that correct?
Correct. That's correct. And I guess The most significant sort of view shed impact would be from basically where the driveway is, sort of up to the north towards the tanks. It's likely that they would be more visible up to the site for a period of time once that corridor is created. Staff does note that this is the approximate area, more or less, of the area that would be subject to tree removal and construction impacts. There is trees retained within the boundaries of the site itself, as well as the intervening Willamette Lane property to the east. The developer is proposing to replant 30 trees, native trees, which does not replace one-to-one the trees that are being removed from the site, but it's not feasible or practical for them to do that because of the widening of the road and the installation of the building on the site. There is no one that directly overlooks this area because even properties to the south are below the road grade for the Weyerhaeuser Road. So it would be, I guess, uphill and over the berm, so to speak, for views into this area. And I do have a Google Street View showing the current access up to the site and, you know, the trees. So there would be a notch into the hillside from the tree removal. That's, you know, probably not disputed, but it's not, I guess, abutting anyone's property, and the intent is to allow the trees to establish over time and to keep the facility somewhat discreet and innocuous on the hillside. It's not going to be an occupied manned facility, so it won't really have much in the way of traffic or noise. There will be a yard light on the building itself for the man door to go into the facility. That's about it.
The other point that I wanted to make sure to bring out was one of your recommendations for approval is the continuation of the sidewalk 120 feet past the northwestern property boundary to a connecting point of the existing. So will that then complete the sidewalk on the east side of Mountain Gate?
Correct.
Down to the connector at the corner with 58?
Yes.
Okay.
So a little history on that, because it's probably been
west side, yes,
noticeable to the neighborhood. The entire segment of sidewalk from below the Mountain Gate neighborhood sign all the way up Mountain Gate Drive past the park was incomplete, and that's as a result of changeover of developers,
yes,
economic downturn, of course. There were a number of things incomplete. Staff was successful in having the segment of sidewalk from essentially around the park all the way down to the property boundary, more or less, of this site installed. And at that time, Sub had made its intentions known that they were looking at possibly obtaining the site. They would be doing work along the site frontage. There was contemplation, actually, of having the pump station on the actual street frontage at one point, which would have had a much more obvious presence, but also Sub had requested that the installation be deferred because of the need to rip it out, essentially, in order to install the driveway, so there would be some throwaway costs. The staff was amenable to doing that with the understanding and expectation that the entire sidewalk would be completed, including off-site, beyond the boundaries of their property, down to where I think it's 777 South 50th Street is where it ends right now. So that entire sidewalk will be complete.
And the reason I say that is there is much, much foot traffic on that Mountain Gate Drive. And having a completed sidewalk there is certainly going to be in the public interest. So, again, from a safety standpoint.
I also noticed that the street lights have been re-engaged too.
They have.
Which is great. That because of wire theft, there was a number of years that the city wasn't able to do that. That's an aside. But, so.
Okay. All right, any more questions?
We did reach the subject of the trees. So the one thing that kind of concerned me about the tree survival is that if we look at the profile for the roadway cut, that it ranges from really none whatsoever to up to, it looks as if it's almost as much as 10 feet. And I'm wondering whether we're going to run into, in that cut bank where we're planning on planting a lot of trees, whether we're going to run into some significant subsoil rock situation that's going to prevent the trees from becoming established. And as an addition to that, I was wondering if there has been a project geotechnical engineer, or if one is on speed dial.
There has been a geotechnical investigation done. They did a borehole specifically on the actual pad site, on the level area, development area, but they did discuss the characteristics of the hillside, and as part of the sort of seismic review of all of Sub's facilities, they did do a contemporary, I think it was 2 years since the geotechnical report was prepared, and it's been submitted as part of their hillside development overlay. So the geotechnical analysis is a requirement of that, and so they did provide that material in support of their overall development application. It wasn't specific to the discretionary use or site plan, but it is one of their attendant submittals for this development approval.
Questions? Okay. Okay. This is the point that we will accept testimony from the applicant. And is there someone from Sub, or is we have a requested Rick Satry will speak on behalf of SUB or on behalf of the applicant, and if you could just state your name and address for the record.
I will do that. Good evening, Commissioners. Rick Satry with Shermer Satry Group, 375 West 4th Avenue, Suite 201 in Eugene, speaking tonight as the applicant's representative. We did distribute to you a copy of my testimony this evening, shared one with the planning secretary and with staff. So the intent was that everyone has something to read while we go through a few points. So I'd like to begin by saying, before anything else, as always, it's a pleasure to work with Springfield, entire organization and staff, from the development issues meeting, pre-submittal, processing, as with many of Springfield Utility Board's water facility sites in the hills, we had a suite of four applications, the discretionary use, site plan review, hillside development, and tree felling. They are all generated as independent, standalone applications for their own independent standalone decision, but nonetheless they're generated in concert with one another, submitted for concurrent review. What you'll be looking at tonight are the first two, the biggest of the two, the discretionary use and site plan review. So we'd like to remind all of us that this is a discretionary use application primarily before us, and that the Planning Commission is reminded, don't need reminding, but you're reminded that you can use your discretionary authority to render a decision. We'd like to also note that the conditions of approval in the report for the discretionary use request, as well as for the site plan review application, are recommended conditions of approval, and you are the deciding authority and you get to decide what those conditions will be. I'd like to first talk about the discretionary use request. There are two recommended conditions. You'll find those in your packet, attachment 1, page 11. Of those two conditions, the second of two has already been asked by commissioners, is regard to the extended sidewalk. Springfield Utility Board has no problem at all extending the full length of that sidewalk. They verbally agreed to that from the get-go in their conversations with the City of Springfield. The first condition, that regarding the requirement that a Type 4 Metro Plan Amendment application be submitted, causes a little bit of heartburn. As we all know, any Type 4 Metro Plan Amendment application is no small effort. No small effort in terms of time and cost. SUB would like to respectfully disagree with staff statement that the facility is not in the adopted facilities plan. You'll note in the attachments in my handout that in table 2, project, if you'll turn to the sheet there in my handout, table 2, these last three pages are excerpts out of the adopted facilities plan. Project number 204 says pump stations, plural, to serve upper levels. In table 14, project on the next page in the handout, project number 204, projects pump stations, plural, to serve upper levels from the years 2005 to 2017. And then lastly, the last page of the handout is a map number 1, that is also out of the adopted facilities plan. I want to note that SUB, in working with the City of Springfield in generating the currently adopted public facilities and services plan, was intentionally vague in the location of sources of water, reservoirs, and pump stations. If you think about when this plan was originally generated, it was before the Great Recession. Recently has some minor amendments and some updating in 2011, but there are four pump station locations identified on the map in the southeast part of Springfield. Those are not location specific. They were intentionally vague because at the time that these identifications were placed on the map. The Mountain Gate subdivision was brand new. The first plats were being filed. There was conversation about Jasper Natron, in particular possibilities about the southern part of Jasper Natron with the Bromstraw Parkway. There was conversations even east with the neighborhood association along South 79th Street at that time about water supply. So there were a lot of things in play when the plan was generated. So there are four pump station locations on the map, none of them site specific. But where is Sub's contention that it should not be a condition of approval for Sub to go through a Type 4 Metro Plan amendment process to update the facilities plan, because it is their contention that these pump station projects, plural, are already in the plan. They're not location specific, because you cannot predict development, the timing, or the location. And because you can't predict development, you really can't predict what you're going to need, when you're going to need it, or where you're going to need it. Furthermore, it was about a year ago, Springfield staff and Sub staff had a conversation about potential changes to the adopted facilities plan. And at that time, the conversation completely focused on 12-inch or above transmission lines. The conversation at that time chose not to involve pump stations, reservoir sites, water source sites. The focus was on transmission lines. So all those things lead Springfield Utility Board to believe that whereas it might be a nice recommendation, it might be a good idea to eventually update the facilities plan, it really shouldn't be a requirement, a condition of approval with this particular application. But again, at the end of the evening, it is you are the deciding authority and you get to decide. The second point tonight is with respect to the site plan review. Site plan review application, the staff report contains 15 recommended conditions of approval. Springfield Utility Board is fine with 14 out of those 15. Would like to spend a little bit of time talking about one of those. Condition number 11 has to do with the size of the proposed replacement trees. Now, as a landscape architect, I will tell you that it is a horticultural fact that the smaller the tree, the better it will be transplanted. Imagine a larger tree. Trees typically have a root mass about twice as wide as a canopy. If you can imagine a tree with any age, with any size to it, the shock, the stress placed on a tree when you dig it, no matter how big the root ball, you dig it up to move it. Small trees, you're not going to suffer the root loss. When trees of any size are transplanted, they tend to go in shock. All of their energy goes into survival mode. They totally focus on trying to replace the roots that they lost. It is documented history, don't have the evidence in front of me, you'll have to just take my word for it, is that a smaller tree will be healthier, will be reestablished sooner, and will eventually, depending on the tree, eventually can overtake the size of a tree that was transplanted as a larger size. Now we're proposing to plant two species of native trees. As an experiment, coincidental, but it's true. As an experiment, I happen to live in a neighborhood that has a lot of native Oregon oaks that are just there, you know, pre-us. And, you know, squirrels being squirrels and what they do, they tend to just harvest those acorns in the fall and bury them all over the place, thinking that they're going to find them with their nose in the middle of the winter and it'd be a great food source. Well, sometimes they forget. And those oak trees tend to sprout. So what I do is when an oak tree sprouts in my backyard, I wait until it's about 6 to 12 inches high, it takes about a year, I transplant it. And over in the corner, the back corner of the backyard, I have what I call Connor's Grove. My grandson, 11-year-old Connor, loves the fact that there's an oak tree grove named after him. But I'll tell you that those 12-inch tall oak trees, transplanted, are growing 3 and 4 and 5 feet a year. Now, those, they have fertilizer, they have soil, they have irrigation. So when we're planting trees on this more or less native hillside, we're not going to get that kind of growth. But I will tell you that smaller trees will do much better than larger trees. And in my testimony tonight, I'm proposing a compromise. Staff is recommending 4 to 6 foot trees. On our plan, landscape plan, we detailed seedlings. So I'm proposing a compromise that we will plant 1 to 2 foot trees. Now I want to show you a little show and tell, if you'll bear with me for just a second. One of the things that we've learned over the years is we learn to rely on the intelligence of other people that figure things out. And one of the things that we've learned is that when you're planting trees in areas where there's no soil preparation, no amendments, no fertilizer, no mulch, no irrigation, you've got to give it whatever you can give it. So we start with small trees, and then there's this product. And I'm not working for a commission. I just love this stuff, though. We've got this product called dry water. And we plant these things, we strip them out of the plastic, we plant these things in the soil next to the tree. There's 90 days worth of water and nutrients right there. There's another 90 days worth of water and nutrients. These are fantastic things. And that's part of the specification that will help those 1 to 2 foot trees do very well, because the specification is called for a year's worth of those little things being made available for those trees. So it's very rare for me to do show and tell, but I just did. So with that, I'd like to say that Springfield Utility Board is very motivated to receive a decision this evening. We have a construction season. We have folks ready to go. We would like your decision tonight. And we do acknowledge that the decision is your decision to make, regardless of what the applicant's testimony may say regarding these two particular conditions. Before I leave the podium, Mr. Cuevilla, your comment about slopes. As staff indicated, that there is a complete current two-year-old geotechnical analysis that was submitted with the package. There has been analysis of soils, geology. There's also been a complete erosion control analysis, stormwater management analysis, and it's been concluded by the engineers and reviewing staff at Public Works that we're fine with respect to the hillside.
And in regard to the establishment of the trees on the cut slope?
Smaller trees, smaller hole.
Okay. Less disturbance. There won't be rock. Just
no.
Right there. Okay.
Right. So with that, I'm available for questions.
Questions. I have one other question regarding the access road. It is, as it approaches Mountain Gate, it's quite steep, and as it comes down, it comes down to the sidewalk. It looks as if, and I'm looking at the profile right now, that it's approximately 8.3%, which is a fairly steep grade to approach a sidewalk. Right? I noted that the road is entirely gravel, and I'm going to recommend a condition of approval of paving at least a certain portion of that roadway as an asphalt apron above the sidewalk, and that would be to prevent gravel from migrating down onto the sidewalk and creating a slip hazard for pedestrians and runners and etc. And I think that would be fairly minimal cost, and I think it would actually be really good for the upkeep of the road for sub in the long run, too.
It's your prerogative to do that.
Asphalt was not planned beyond the up the hill for a certain measure?
There's really no reason to. We have to realize that what we have before us this evening is really just frosting on the cake with respect to the package of application and the supporting materials, the geotechnical analysis, the engineering of the road. It has been designed and engineered to accommodate the soils, the slope, the storm runoff. We've got the vegetated swales with check dams. We've got the revegetation. It has been designed in concert with Springfield Fire and Life Safety for emergency vehicles. It's hard to imagine a fire truck with water needing to put out a fire in a water reservoir, but there are other reasons why it might want to be there for any sort of emergency services, emergency access. But it's been designed so that all of the emergency vehicles, as well as Springfield Utility Board's maintenance vehicles, can completely accommodate that.
Thank you.
There is a hydrant. There is a hydrant across from the pump station.
That's good. And gravel is a pervious surfacing, so it's greener than asphalt.
All right. Other questions?
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. Okay. Any other testimony in support of the application? Okay. Any testimony opposed to the application? Hearing none. Summation by staff.
Thank you. I did want to point out the condition that the applicant's challenging regarding the discretionary use. Staff is not looking to amend the proposed facilities plan that is deliberately vague and somewhat ambiguous. It is the existing facilities plan because there will be a pinpointed location for the pump station facility once it's constructed. So that's the actual established project. Its location and its completion is what staff is looking to add to the public facilities and services plan. The proposed facilities can remain as is. There will be future facilities for sub in the Thurston Hills, and you know that is facilitates further development of that. So I wanted to clarify that the plan that's depicted and that was submitted by Mr. Satry in his testimony is not the plan and not the intent of staff to amend that. It's to actually show it as a completed project. Staff was obligated to do that previously with stormwater projects in Glenwood and elsewhere. So that's just one of the sort of housekeeping measures to show, you know, what's been done. It can be struck off the list and shown as existing in the metro area. So just clarification on that point.
Yes.
I'm just asking just because applicant talked about this being a very, very expensive process. Is it?
It is, which is one of the reasons why staff had anticipated that hopefully it could be bundled with other projects that would require amendments to said plan. So it would be just part and parcel to an amendment that would be, you know, number of projects bundled together. And then that way it would obviate the need for multiple discretionary use proceedings. They would be basically go through a public procedure, public hearings, adoption, and then it basically streamlines the future review of projects as they come forward.
So staff have stipulated a one calendar year time frame for this type 4 metro plan amendment.
I believe it was from essentially completion of the facility and commencement of operations.
Okay.
So it would be beyond a year from now. It would be a year from completion of the project, which could be 2017, you know, 2018 or so. I would anticipate it would be done by the end of the year, this calendar year. And so it would be, you know, by the end of 2017, I guess, to initiate those amendments.
Okay. What would be the repercussion if we're talking about bundling projects together, providing a little more time to be able to pull those projects together? I mean, are there projects on the docket right now that SUP has that they could bundle together with this one? Or
I believe there is one in Glenwood. Is the substation?
That's done.
Is that on
there? That one's done.
No. That one's done.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think there's anything that I'm specifically aware of. But it's something that it's something that needs to be done as a housekeeping measure and not get too far down the road. You know, staff just wants to be consistent in its application and it's the city's commitment to having to do these plan amendments for its projects, you know, in order to make sure that nothing's left off the list. And it is a significant undertaking to do that. It's costly and time consumptive to do that.
Okay.
So the other thing I guess I'd like to point out with the other condition that Mr. Satry had challenged on the site plan, in his testimony, I didn't say it verbally, but I did notice in the written testimony, there was a discrepancy between the plan sheet detail, which called for seedlings, and the plan narrative, which calls for 4 to 6 foot trees. Typically, for landscaping trees in the city's development code, you're looking at a 2-inch caliper standard, which would be probably roughly 4 to 6 feet high. So staff had seized on that discrepancy and recommended the larger sizing. However, based on Mr. Satry's testimony, I think it's up to the Planning Commission whether, in this particular case, in a non-maintained native hillside situation, whether the seedlings may be better suited for establishment and long-term growth.
Okay. Yes.
In either case, does anybody ever go back and you know, a year or two later and just make sure that they're okay, that we have a certain density?
There would be requirement, you know, the city would look at doing a final site inspection, as we do with all developments, and that would be after everything's been planted. Then there would be an obligation on the part of the developer to maintain the site improvements, which includes landscaping. So there would be, you know, provision for replacement. That said, it would be incumbent on the city staff to revisit the site to ensure that that's happening. This is kind of out of public view. It's not going to be something that's well traveled. However, there may be neighborhood interest in ensuring that the trees do establish and provide some buffering of, you know, what has occurred on the site if the construction does come occur. So.
Okay. Other questions for staff? Hearing none. Thank you. Rebuttal from the applicant.
Democracy's fun, isn't it? It's great. So, with respect to trees and survivability, we place in the construction contract a 1-year warranty, so that at the end of 1 year after the final completion that staff recommended, agent, the developer, in this case sub, or their representative, either ourselves or their engineers, typically visit a site a year after final completion, take a look at things, and if anything has a warranty, it's common for mechanical things to have a warranty and buildings to have a warranty, but we also place a warranty on trees of 1 year in length. With respect to the Type 4 Metro Plan Amendment, you know, a little more time would be appreciated by Springfield Utility Board. And that is a metro area plan. It's not just water and electric facilities in that plan. And it's not just Springfield. I mean, it's Springfield and Eugene in that facilities plan. And there's water and electricity, there's stormwater, there's sanitary. And perhaps, this is a conversation that I haven't had with anyone, but perhaps over the next 18 to 24 months, we might be able to bundle a number of projects from a number of different service providers, and perhaps there could be a sharing of the process and the time and the cost and the burden to update the facilities plan. Because staff does make a good point, the facilities plan is important, and it is important that it be accurate. It's just a matter of placing the burden based on one project on one of the participants in that plan. So that's just a thought.
Could you make a recommendation? I mean, if this was your ideal world, what would you like to see? Timing?
It's hard to say, because I don't know what other facilities have been constructed or are going to be constructed in the next 18 to 24 months by all of the other providers in the metro area. But I'm thinking, you know, 18 to 24 months, something like that. I mean, we don't need to push it out very far. But perhaps just a little bit of time for the various service providers to be able to have a conversation amongst themselves to say, hey, I've got a project that was built, it's not in the plan, I'll participate, and things like that. I mean, that might be able to be orchestrated to be that, to have that cooperative effort.
Okay.
Questions?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so at this point, if anyone is interested in continuing the public hearing, now would be, or the written record, now would be the time to speak. Hearing none, I would certainly entertain a motion to close the public record and close the public hearing.
Mr. Chair, I move that the public record and public testimony be closed.
Second.
Motion was made by Commissioner Moe, seconded by Commissioner Cuevla to close the public record and the public hearing. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Planning Commission discussion. We heard both recommendation from staff and testimony. We have two actions before us. We have first the discretionary use permit. The question from a standpoint of the applicant was knowing the importance of the Metro Plan update. Initially, the request was to remove the requirement for that update. Secondarily, in rebuttal, we heard an expression of an extended time frame might allow some cooperation between public agencies to allow, rather than one, to undertake that by themselves, to combine some of those resources and make that happen. So, feelings?
I consider it seems to be a pretty good idea. I would wonder who the onus of finding the cooperation would be put upon. I'm also thinking that a definite time frame should be established for if such cooperation was not forthcoming, that it would revert to.
Well, here's my reading and understanding of this. If the time frame right now and the staff's recommendation is 12 months, that time frame could be extended. The onus is still on sub, would be on the applicant to do it within the time frame. Whether they could find someone to cooperate and work together on that process, the onus is, would still be on them within that time frame to meet that requirement. So that would be my reading of that. Does that make sense?
It does, and that doesn't seem either one of the proposals, both the extension and going to a tree where we have a guarantee that these things are going to be alive, time enough to establish.
The tree piece is part of the site plan review package. Let's deal with the discretionary use piece first. Okay. So do I hear a motion? Is anyone prepared to make a motion? Further discussion?
I would first want to ask,
you bet,
that there was an initial proposed condition regarding paving. Is that to something
that's
that
site plan?
Okay. So then the only condition would be regarding the extension of the requirement of time for the. All right. So I will move then to approve TYP 316-00001, Springfield Utility Board's discretionary use permit application for a pump station and water pipeline at Mountain Cape Drive and South 58th Street, map 18-02-03-00, tax lots 800 and 801, and map 18-02-04-11, tax lot 10900, with the condition of approval regarding the time allowed for co-joining with any other party in regard to establishing a record for the public facilities and service plan. Does that cover everything that we wanted to cover?
I think we're missing a couple of things here. Number one, we need a date specific. And it really has nothing to do with co-joining. We are just going to deal with the date. So I would revise your I would like to propose a revision to your motion stating to extend the Metro Plan amendment to 24 months rather than the staff's recommended 12 months. Okay?
So do I need to restate that, or could I indicate that conditions as per the written record?
As per the written record.
As per the record that we're accumulating tonight.
I think the motion needs
to
state.
Or I could simply state as a specific condition that if we have a time period extended to 24 months.
That's exactly right. Okay.
He's amended his motion. I'll second it.
Okay. So it's been moved by Commissioner Vo, seconded by Commissioner Mo, to approve the discretionary use application as stated. I'm not going to restate it, and extending the time frame for the Metro Plan amendment to 24 months, the recommended time frame to 24. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Okay, on to the second item, which is a site plan review piece. This is the piece that the applicant made a request to consider smaller trees and attempted to make a case for smaller trees surviving better, and on rebuttal indicated a 1 to 2 foot tree rather than a seedling would be their recommendation.
I have a comment.
Yes.
I may should have disclosed this at the beginning of the hearing, but I'm very, very familiar with this site. I was the construction superintendent when we built this road, plus the ring walls for the water tanks back in 1965. The trees on the north side of the road do not even exist in those areas. They have grown since then. I have another comment about this I want to make after we close. Pretty important one to me. But that's 50 years worth of growth right there, at least less than 50 years.
Okay.
I'd like to suggest that since the ground is being pretty seriously altered, that we extend the warranty period with the sub be amenable to doing their own inspection on the trees and extending the warranty period for 2 years.
It's really up to us. And typically the warranty period is a requirement of the general contractor. You know, typically a 2-year warranty on those types of things are very difficult to deal with a general contractor. You certainly could hold sub's feet to the fire for 2 years.
That was my suggestion.
Chair, I need to interrupt for a second.
Yes.
We need to just really quickly reopen the hearing. Reopen the record to allow the applicant to rebut the ex parte contact that was disclosed by Commissioner Mo, if they would like to do that.
Okay.
And then we can close again and keep going.
Reopen the hearing.
Yes, just okay. For that limited purpose.
Okay. So we will reopen the hearing and allow the applicant to rebut Commissioner Mo's ex parte communication.
If they'd like to.
If they would like to.
No problem. Love to learn the history lesson.
I've got something else to add.
Okay.
I don't care whether it's a party or not.
Right.
I'll tell you in advance.
Okay. Close the hearing.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you, legal counsel, for keeping us on track. Okay. So back to the site plan review piece. So certainly, it is at the discretion of this commission to do that. So understand that our staff, city staff, at some level are going to have to either have a report back from SUB or or have some way to follow up on the establishment of that, those trees. So, okay?
I'm definitely okay with the 1 to 2 foot tree. I'll leave the tree planting up to the tree experts. As far as an extended warranty, especially knowing that, I mean, it's a native hillside, trees have grown there for a long time, I'm not too concerned that it would be a problem in the future, and I don't see a necessity to really put more on there, personally.
Trees grow faster in Lake County than any place in the world.
Okay. So that's the tree. That's the tree issue. I think we probably can work something into a motion that would be amenable to everyone there. This is also the area that Commissioner Cuevilla also expressed some concern about a paved.
Regarding the paving at the sidewalk, what we'll have is we'll have a situation where the gravel road comes down like this. There's a sidewalk and driveway immediately adjacent. As trucks go up and down the driveway, which they will do, the gravel will migrate, and I've seen this over and over again on gravel driveways, gravel will migrate down onto the sidewalk and it'll create a slipping and sliding hazard for people walking. And the usual way to deal with this is to pave in asphalt a short area above the driveway to minimize the trucks carrying those additional pieces of gravel down onto the sidewalk or any tire spinning. And that would be one of my conditions of approval. It's really typical on gravel driveway approaches to a commercial driveway to have asphalt paving.
Question to staff: Can we speak with staff again in regard to this paved entrance? What is the city standard in regard?
Typically, the standard, and to be honest, I missed that. I thought there was going to be paving going up the portion of the hill, and so I guess did not have input from either myself or my colleagues that did the plan review that there was a lack of paving. Typically, there would be an 18-foot pavement beyond the property line. So that would be beyond the sidewalk and then into the property uphill, at least 18 feet for a track out area or, you know, whatever you want to call it. So that's the typical development code standard. Sub may want to consider a little bit further up the hill, just kind of get up over that rise and then continue the gravel up there because there might be a bit of erosion potential. Excuse me, at the where the pavement would meet the gravel there, if it's mid-slope, so to speak, it may tend to, you know, collect gravel and wash out over time. So,
yep. My only concern is the public safety of using the sidewalk.
Absolutely, and that's one of the reasons why it's a standard in the development code, even in a residential application.
So, would that have been caught downstream from this process, or?
Yes. Yeah.
Is it eminent that we recognize that through this process?
I think it's appropriate. It's entirely appropriate for that condition to be that they at least meet the development code requirement of paving 18 feet into the site.
All right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I support at least 10 feet beyond, like I said, for public safety.
If it's a code requirement 18, we gotta be
18. And thanks for catching up.
Minimum of 18. Okay. So, is anyone prepared to make a motion?
I will move to approve TYP 216-00014, Springfield Utility Board's site plan approval. Map 18-02-03-00, tax lots 800 and 801, and map 18-02-04-11, tax lot 10900, with the following conditions of approval, one being agreement with the applicant's compromise on tree size, and the second being a requirement that paving be installed from the sidewalk to a distance, do we have a specific distance of 18 feet?
A minimum of 18 feet.
A minimum of 18 feet.
Second.
Okay. So it was moved by Commissioner Bose, seconded by Commissioner Landon, that we approve with the conditions of 1 to 2 foot size trees and paving past the property line up the hill a minimum of 18 feet. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes unanimously. Okay? All right. So, on to reports of council action. Commissioner Landon has a report, I believe.
Yes. I had an assignment to attend a city council meeting on the 7th of March, and they, of course, took up some of the work that we've been doing on the recreational use of marijuana. The only significant difference was that they didn't, I remember we had some discussion about not necessarily restricting to arterial to allow them some of the smaller streets. Council disagreed with that and wanted to use revise that back to arterials. They agreed with 500 foot setbacks as from the state parks as sufficient. Quite a heated discussion on the LTD plans for the next 3 years. There really aren't any major changes except there's a loop that goes up on the west side in Eugene and up around north of the mall and then off just off to the east side of there where they're going to combine and create a loop there. They don't have that right now. So they're talking about doing that. Mayor Lundberg was, her kind of biggest interest was trying to increase the frequency of some of, particularly some of the heavier used routes, because all of the routes have seen some decreases of late. They didn't offer any explanation for that. The other thing was there was a public hearing discussing restriction of roadside financial transactions as a way of improving safety. Now, I have to tell you that one became a little bit heated. Those who support homeless causes kind of thought that this is an assault on homeless. Mayor Lundberg in the working session said, no, if this doesn't apply to everybody, I'm not going to support it, which means it applies to fill the boot, it applies to, you know, wash your cars and all of that. The idea is you don't want people, you know, running across traffic with lights changing and whatnot. It's creating a hazard. And so she said, you know, we just need to find and council, I think, agreed on this, that they need to do that. It is an emotional hot button issue. All of the key buzzwords came out, so we need to hear it.
Mr. Chair, if I could apologize, folks in the back can't hear you.
The other thing was the Bicycle Pedestrian Activities Committee. They had a tour proceeding from Willamette Lane, 32nd, and moving east Virginia out to 42nd, Daisy, and on to Bob Straub, and trying to figure out how to make that safer, particularly at 42nd. If you move from 32nd to 42nd, I think the agreement was that you can probably make that safe just by marking that this is bikes and cars share the road. You get east of 42nd and the volume goes up drastically. As a pedestrian crossing area, 42nd is almost, you're taking your life in your hands. The traffic going north and south doesn't stop for the sidewalk, so they thought about treatments of, you know, using some of the flashing sidewalks that we've been installing elsewhere. There's apparently funding to do, mixed funding that they're gonna have available to do this. So they're just considering ways of, you know, particularly 42nd flashing, possibly roundabouts, mini roundabouts at some of the further east, just because Daisy's almost becoming used as a thoroughfare. and it's not supposed to be. It's a residential street, and the idea is we need to figure out how to make it safe, slow it down on that busier section. I think they're definitely talking about dedicated bike lanes, possibly elevated pedestrian crossings that slows people down, other things, treatments that slow things down. So I think that pretty well covers it. Very useful.
Good. Any other?
The only thing I would add is council did vote to remove the 1,000-foot buffer between retail marijuana locations. That was a big one that they took out that the industry supported and that we had passed along to them, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting.
And I attended the work session and city council meeting last night. Sean was also there for the work session where the community development block grants were discussed, and looks like a great program and real benefit to the community. They also passed acceptance of a sewer project, the marijuana rulings, and apparently approved a unique flame sculpture as well as part of the consent calendar. And then also honored a long-term fire marshal, which was a nice, really nice thing. And had a discussion regarding general obligation bonds, too, that was very enlightening.
Street repair, or?
No, it was refinancing general obligation bonds, and actually it ends up having the same life on the bonds and saving money in the long run. So it was really, really excellent fiscal.
Good. Any other reports?
One here.
Yes?
April 11th. It was a short agenda, but not necessarily a short meeting. One item, they had a joint meeting with the museum committee, and the two main issues were finances, as they always are, and the second point of discussion was what would be the most appropriate number of displays that they would be required or asked to present each year. So those were the finances were the key issue, and there was a suggestion they go one counselor to actually looking into doing an audit of their financial records. And the second item was discussion in regard to transportation providers such as the Uber and various others. And the main point in that discussion was there's an opportunity to regulate in conjunction with Eugene and to enforce in conjunction with Eugene on regulations for these providers, or the other option would be to create your own regulations and own enforcement in Springfield only, with additional costs that would be incorporated in that option. So those are the two main points, and I know you presented there. Is there any other points that okay, so that's it for April 11th.
Good. Well, thank you for those updates. I would just mention from a logistics standpoint, speaking with staff about whether we would have a quorum here tonight, when we get a notice from Brenda or from staff about our meetings, it's very helpful if we can respond and say to her, yes, I will be there, or so that they can then know if they're going to have a quorum. So let's just try to make that a standard practice. I think that would be really helpful to staff.
Normally, Brenda asks us that, and I didn't see that
in
the correspondence here. That's why I did not respond.
I didn't see any correspondence either, so same ditto with it. So, because there are times when there's uncertainty because of known absences. She will do
I think it's a good practice for us just to, you know, when she sends, just say, yes, I plan on attending, and then it's just a standard practice for us.
Yeah, as long as we are notified that there's a question of uncertainty. Yeah.
I think she may have, when she sent the copy of the agenda, included a request to the commissioners to let her know if they were going to have a problem attending the meeting, this concern about a quorum. So it didn't, this time it didn't come out as a separate email that was included in the agenda.
I think his way, I mean, I don't remember seeing it, but you know, Greg's idea, I think, is...
I think it's just good practice.
It's an opt-in, opt-out.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll opt in.
Okay. All right, any other business, Greg?
No, sir.
Okay. Hearing none?
I do.
Oh, that's right.
I want to make that comment. The reason I didn't...
Commissioner Mo.
The reason I didn't declare an interest in this before, because Patrick's already talked about it. On page 7, we were doing that, boy, I'm really choked up. It's been 50 years. I was following a front end loader up that path, and he got distracted. He went up on the right side and flipped over and ran out on top of him and killed him right in front of me. His name was Guy Allison. He was the nicest guy you ever knew. And I think about it every day. And right at this location. So that's, I want to mention his name because he hasn't been forgotten.
We stand adjourned.
Thank you.